hold your ears here. Okay, it's working. All right. Last week we talked about the courage of David. And we've talked about courage, really talking about, in some ways, the ability to overcome fear. But even more, it's much more than that. We've talked about how, over and over again, if you want to overcome fear, if you want to have courage, you need knowledge. But not just any knowledge. You know, sometimes we can gain knowledge by experience, and we can come to learn that some things ought not to be feared. I know that we've probably all had our phobias over the years. You know, my wife had a phobia of snakes. Now, snakes can really, ought to be feared in some cases, but sometimes you can have an irrational fear of that. And you can kind of come to learn, if you go to the zoo and you look through the cages where the snakes are, they're not going to hurt you. You know, there's some things that experience gains that, you know, you're going to be okay. But the real key for us in life is to understand that we need the knowledge of God. God knows us. God promises us a fellowship and a continual care. And God has given us a path to follow. And it's in that we really develop real courage. Fear is real. And when you fear, you have fear. And it takes time to overcome it. And we talked about last week about how David's relationship to God and his experience helped him overcome fear. We talked about how, as David was a shepherd, that he fought and killed a lion, that he fought and killed a bear as a young man. He had those experiences. And he knew it came from God. And so when he finds Goliath to be fought, that, well, there wasn't much problem there. Because he had already had experience. He understood how to control his fear. He understood the realms in which he could fight for the Lord. And the Lord would be with him. And we finished last week with a discussion question. And I want to finish, just talk about number four one more time. It is very important for we as parents, grandparents, in encouraging other young people to learn how to build courage. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make sometimes is that they think that you will develop courage by running. Running from conflict. I've seen situations where young people were having to face a difficult circumstance. For instance, I can remember on a couple of occasions, and I'll use us as an example because we just simply had this experience. I'm not trying to be boastful or trying to draw attention to us, Yvette and I, and our work, but we had situations where our children were in the band. And there was going to be a weekend trip for the band. Now, one of the things I wanted my children to learn is that when the Lord's Day came, that it was the Lord's Day, and that they should attend services. But at the same time, I'd want them to go on a trip with a band. And what we did is when they took trips, we would just let people know ahead of time, now we can go on the trip, but we, when service times comes, we want them to be able to go to services. Now, what it took for us then, we ended up making the trip as well, at least one of us, and that was fine because we enjoyed seeing them do things and seeing them participate in things. And so when time came for Sunday morning, and even if they were in a competition, they'd go to church. Generally, their competition wasn't on Sunday morning. I don't know if we ever faced that particular one. But you see, what we did is that we decided, and our kids understood it, okay, as a Christian, the first day of the week is the Lord's. There were some other occasions where they were going on a trip. I remember they were going to go to as eighth graders, I believe, they were going to go to some swim park. And well, we decided we really didn't want our boys to go to that with the lack of clothing and other things. And of course, you know, we tried to be very consistent in that. And we now see with our children, they're pretty consistent in some of those things. They've got to fight their own battles. But, you know, some parents would say, oh, I don't want my child to be different. Oh, I don't want them to experience the shame of being pulled out of something or not doing what everybody else is doing. Of course, if we had taken that approach, our children would probably be just like everyone else. And I'm giving you a small example here. There are many other examples that I'm sure you can give in circumstances, but I'm just saying that as Christians, as we try to instill faith, we want to have raised Davids just like Jesse raised a David. And it doesn't come by taking the easy path. Any comments before we get back into our class, our study? Okay. Let's now talk about some other factors in developing courage. It's quite interesting. David went through some very difficult times. I'm sure in his background he would have thought that he would rather be fighting a lion or a bear than to be fighting the king of Israel, Saul. He found himself in a situation where he had to flee from his home and where he had to hide in caves, where it looked like that against all odds that he was not going to live. Could you imagine having the king of Israel with the entire army of Israel against you? But we read that after David, you know, went ahead and went to and fled from Saul, there were a group of men that came to him. This group of men sometimes are described as David's mighty men. If you are a person of faith and courage by nature, and we're going to talk about this more in lesson two when we talk about the power of a biblical fellowship and talk about David's friendships and associations. But it's not to be a surprise is that the men that became very close friends with David ended up becoming men and women of courage as well. Let's read some of the verses about David's mighty men. These are the names of the mighty men who David had. And it says Joash Bashab, the Tachomite, chief amongst the captains. He was called Adino the Enzite because he had killed 800 men at one time. And after him was Eleazar, son of Dodo, the Ahohite, one of the three mighty men with David, when they defied the Philistines who were gathered there for battle, and the men of Israel had retreated. He arose and attacked the Philistines until his hand was weary, and his hand stuck to the sword. The Lord brought a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to plunder. After him was Shema, the son of Agi, the Hariite. The Philistines had gathered together into a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. So the people fled from the Philistines. But he stationed himself in the middle of the field, defended it, and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. As we begin to read about the mighty men, notice one of the key elements. Everybody else is running for the hills. It's a hopeless situation. They're outnumbered. But these men stood. They stood on the same basis that David stood. They knew the Lord. They knew what they could do. And they understood, sure, from the example of David as well, how to stand with courage. So when we talk about the mighty men of David, and you see that courageous men will encourage courageous men, and you begin to see the power of an association. Let's talk more about the essential. If you think about David, and you think about what would be characteristic of him, before we even entered into this study, if you heard the name King David, tell me from a biblical standpoint, from your exposure of the Bible, what do you think of when you think of David from the Old Testament? Class, just some thoughts. Just not even having prepared for this class. What do you think of when you think of David? What's that? You think of Goliath? Certainly. What else? A man after God's own heart. And he had a heart for God, you know, because man after God's own heart. What else? Bathsheba, his sin. What else? That's right, the Psalms. And one of the things you will notice here, it's quite interesting. A lot of people think he's a songwriter. He writes poetry. You know, sometimes as men, you may think, well, I'm a man. I'm not going to get involved in something like that. You know, I believe he could be a soldier and he can go out here and fight. But what's all this writing that he's involved with? And you see, you'd make a big mistake if you somehow thought that David's Psalms and his pouring out his heart and his ability to express himself in those ways was a sign of weakness. Matter of fact, I want to suggest to you that was one of the very essence of his strength. Look at the Psalms. Over and over again, as you see the Psalms of David, you see his heart. Okay, how do you develop courage? How do you go against the grain? How do you develop the strength if you're the only one to stand? Look at some of the passages here, Psalms 18. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. My God, my strength in whom I will trust. My shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. You think of the song we sing about that. So many of the Psalms of David we sing, and you look at in the context, enemies. But you got a fortress. You have the praise of God found here. A couple of months ago, before I left Virginia, I got together with a group that I regularly met with. I drive 85 miles every Wednesday night. We go meet with a group of people in the Stafford area of Virginia. And we were talking about looking at raising our children, talking about being the kind of people we ought to be, and probably what would be one of the keys to a person making it spiritually over time. And one of the things we concluded in the class was the ability to be thankful and to praise God. I'm serious. If you have a daily recognition of the great things God has done for you, if you learn to praise God, that will, over time, give you strength. What do you do when you're afraid? And you want to overcome that fear, but you're concerned. You know, be mindful of God. Over and over again, notice Psalms 18 again, verse 31. For who is God except the Lord? And who is a rock except God? It is God who arms me with strength and makes my way perfect. He makes my feet like the feet of deer and sets me on high places. He teaches my hands to make war so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze. You have given me the shield of your salvation. Your right hand has held me up. Your gentleness has made me great. You enlarged my path under me so my feet did not slip. So, brethren, if we want to have courage, first off, we need to know where we stand with God. I realize that sometimes in an audience like this, and that sometimes we'll go through struggles and ask the question, where do I stand with God? I remember when I was in a denominational group growing up, one of the ways we did evangelism is we would go and talk to somebody and say, if you were to die today, do you know you'd spend an eternity with God? And that's a good question. And a lot of times people would say, well, I hope so, maybe so, perhaps so. But I realize at times that we could, for whatever reason, not have a confidence in where we stand before God. If you don't have a confidence in where you stand before God, you cannot have courage. And so that's the first thing that you need to deal with. You need to know where you stand with God. I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm not talking about once saved, always saved. I'm simply talking about a day-to-day walking with God and being able to go to Him with confidence in prayer, knowing your standing, praising Him, knowing His providence. Seriously, brethren, some of the things that we really want to see in our life that we think we've got to go through all these complicated things to learn, really, in my opinion, right here is the foundation. That if we'll do this well, you'll be blessed. You'll find that strength. Could you imagine being in Joshua's shoes? What position did he get thrust into? He was leading Israel. Now, Israel was just a group of mighty men, right? No, they haven't been a group of mighty men. Matter of fact, they kind of wandered in the wilderness because they were complaining and fussing. And he'd taken over Moses' place. And they're a relatively small group going into a place with walled cities. How are they going to make it? In Deuteronomy 31:23, as the Lord spoke to Joshua, then he inaugurated Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and be of good courage. For you shall bring the children of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you. Later on, you see a very similar statement made, and you can, we won't read the whole verse here, but over and over again, look at verse 9, for instance. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor to be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And so again, as we talk about courage, we understand one's relationship with God. Let me ask this question, class, of you. What happens if we are filled with guilt and we're not sure God answers our prayers? What happens if we're in that situation? What happens when we face temptation and we're not sure where we stand? Do you have much courage? No. I've heard one person said, well, you know, it's kind of like the old saying, a bird in the hand's worth two in the bush. Here, I could have the worldly pleasures here, and here's the reward of heaven, but I'm not sure about that. We need to understand that's how you can face the difficulties of life. Now, let's talk a little bit about worship. I'm going to throw a question out to you, class. What is worship? What is worship? One at a time. I'm going to call on somebody if you don't answer me. Okay. Yes, in the New Testament, one of the Greek words, proskuneo, literally means to kiss the hand upward, and it is to prostrate yourself. The idea of bringing yourself before God in a special way to give Him reverence. Worship. Is worship easy? In order to worship God, what has to happen in your mind? With a definition given, and I believe a correct definition. In order for you to worship God, what are some things that has to take place? What? Have to humble yourself? Okay. What else? What's that? Have to trust? Okay. What else? Obedience? Okay. What else? What's that? You have to empty yourself? What else? Love. Got to love God. Now, we're getting in a direction I want to go. We're talking about what we must be, but in terms of our mind and our thinking, we love God, and we have to, in some sense, put ourselves before Him in our mind. You ever thought about that? That worship is not just a mental activity. It is placing yourself before God. And that is something that we do because, is God seen? Let me ask you this, is God seen? God is not seen. God is ever present, but even though He's ever present, we have to put ourselves in a position to be put in His presence. Do you understand? Are you following me? Now, like, there are times that I might be driving down the road, and Yvette is with me, and we may not be talking, but I know she's there. That doesn't take a lot of effort. Now, there may be times she's not there, and I'll think about her, you know, and think about her. And there's a sense, not the same sense as God, but there's a sense that, you know, she can be with me even though she's not there. But here, when we worship, there has to be a mental focus, a mental choice to recognize God's presence and put ourselves before Him. And in that, worship is work. There's a lot of people that won't take the position that everything we do is worship. And I think that is a very confusing concept at best. I've understood worship to be a special time where we put ourselves before God, and in that, you begin to see the power of God's presence and the power of worship to transform our thinking. Psalms 27:4, David says, "One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple." Look at verse 8. When you say, "Seek my face," my heart said to you, "You, Lord, your face, Lord, I will seek." Have you ever thought of that before? Seeking the face of the Lord. So when we pray, it's just not some kind of mental repetition. It is placing ourselves before God, placing ourselves with the understanding of His will. And in that, that does us good. The more we can learn how to focus our hearts and minds and learn to worship, I think it's a terrible trivialization of worship for somebody to say, and I've heard people say that changing a bedpan is just as much worship as the Lord's Supper, and I say foolishness to that. There's a service we can give, and there's always an awareness of God's presence in everything we do. But my understanding of worship is a much more higher and more significant event. And that's why you can read in the Old Testament, or where, even in the sacrifice of Isaac, where he told his son, we're going to go over here to worship. Worship is not just any activity, but it's a time to put yourself before God. Let me tell you what happens if we don't learn to do that. How many of you have been in a congregation and there are people in the congregation you don't know very well? You don't ever visit. You don't ever talk. And maybe something stressful happens. Maybe something bad has happened and you're worried about people talking. You know, when you're not really interacting with somebody, you don't really know them, you don't generally trust them as well, do you? I mean, as a rule. In marriage, you know, sometimes Yvette and I talk about our busy schedules, and sometimes we've got to get reacquainted. It's not a good thing for us to be going this way and that way and there not be any interaction. It's very critical in the maintaining of a relationship to have interaction. Now, how about with God? If we don't learn how to worship, by nature, we're going to be more distant. We're going to be separated. We're going to be more liable to be overwhelmed by guilt and not have a sense of His presence. And you see, when you get this, then when you go out in your life, you understand God's presence daily. I love Psalms 139. We'll just look at verse 3. Oh, let's start with verse 1. Let's read the whole passage here. Oh, Lord, You have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, You know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before and have laid Your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. And so again, as we talk about David's courage, that's why you read about David praising God and singing psalms. In various circumstances, he wrote psalms. It's interesting. I can't wait until we get to the next week's material, or at least it may be the week after next before we get to it. But there's some of the psalms that David wrote. It's not until you start looking at his life until you realize the circumstances when he wrote it. There was one man by the name of Doeg that ended up slaughtering the priest of God. And David had inadvertently been a factor in this man spreading some false things to Saul and Saul killing the priest. And in Psalms 52, he wrote a psalm about this evil man that had contributed to the killing of the priest of God. But it's very interesting. David regularly, in various circumstances, would go to God and talk to God about the things that happened. He sought His face. Again, we're reading this. We've read this twice already, but let's read it one more time. Psalms 27:7. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. When You said, seek my face, my heart said to You, Your face, Lord, I will seek. Before we get into the questions, I want to bring up one more point. And excuse me for my head cold. I changed my medicines this morning on my head cold and it's not working, so I'm kind of struggling with you this morning a little bit. But looking at the last point is sometimes there are brethren that talk about worshiping God and knowing God, and just like anything, any degree of knowledge that you have, if you're not careful, it can become pride. And I've seen some people that talk about knowing God, but they become unteachable. They talk about having a love for God, and they talk about the grace of God, and then they end up doing some pretty bad things. And we've got to be careful here. When we talk about worshiping God and knowing God, there's always a humility. There's not a stubbornness. There's the ability to be taught always. In Psalms 25:4, it says, "Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me. For you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day." Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the questions here on this section. excuse me. All right. Class discussion. We go back to courage. We've learned several sources of courage, but let's review it again, class. I want courage. I want my children to be raised to be children of faith and courage. How do I get it? How do I develop courage? Let's list it. Be right with God. Got to start there. Absolutely. What's that? Absolutely. Be thankful. Or faithful or thankful? Thankful, okay. Be thankful. Because that constantly, when you're thankful, you know God's with you. God's providing. You're confident for God's future provisions. You don't have to figure out everything. All you got to do is you're right with God. God's going to take care of me. What else? Knowledge. Know what to fear, know not what to fear. How many times do we read in the New Testament where Jesus says, be not afraid? Some of the passages written by Peter and then even by Paul, he says, don't be afraid of their threatenings. Don't be afraid. Understand we're to fear, we're not to fear. Very important. What else? Developing courage. Yeah, don't run from problems. Don't run from that. Don't feel bad when you stand and people beat on your head or your children stand and beat on their head. There have been times, I know, with Yvette, we kind of were hurting with our children or they went through a bad experience, but I was kind of smiling inside too because I know that's going to work out for some good stuff. I'll never forget, there was an occasion where my son Nathan was invited to teach a class of athletes it was a denominational group. They were just a small group. They were meeting in a home. But they asked him to speak and teach of the class, and he taught it. But during the class, before the study, they sang with an instrument, and he wouldn't sing with the instrument. And later, they asked him about that a little bit, and he said, look, I'll be glad to study it with you. Here, my son was, in high school here. And I appreciated him saying that. But then the next time they had a class, they were gaining respect for Nathan. And they wanted Nathan to lead singing. And Nathan said, I would lead singing as long as we don't use an instrument. Nathan came back from that class that night. He was shaking a little bit. He said he got up there and he started leading. And they couldn't sing. He said that they couldn't sing. It was a real struggle to get through it, and there were some people laughing. And he came in almost with tears. I can't believe somebody would laugh at the singing of praises to God. And we visited and talked about that. And even though I hurt for Nathan, where I knew that he felt like there was some ridicule there, I felt like that was a great experience for him to have. And I want to tell you something. The people in that class gained a greater respect for him. And so there are circumstances and situations like that that, again, I say, parents, we're not going to throw our kids out there in the lion's den in some sense, but we should not be afraid. And we should be encouraged when our children stand, and even when sometimes people want to beat on their head. What else in developing courage? What else? Worship and really learning to do that. A couple of other things I would add in here: association, the mighty men. You gain strength when you're around other people who have that kind of strength. Learning who to put yourself around, and I'm sure we can. And experience, step by step. From a young child on, you learn to face the lion and the bear, and you just keep working up the ladder. Question two. How how does a relationship with God change how we think? Yes. Yeah, you've got God helping you. You face temptation and God is with you. What else? That's really the essence of it. But you've got to think this way. You've got to think this way. When you face a fear, one of the first things you've got to do, I know my God's not going to forsake me. I know my God will help me. Lord, help me to see. What decision do I need to make? Is there some scripture I need to learn? Is there some other things I need to develop and learn? And, you know, that'll give you great strength and courage. Number three, how can worship change how we think? To control the mind, to change how we think. Repetition, reverence. Over and over again, over and over again, over and over again. We get these things. We got to pound it into our head, and we've got to keep learning it by going to God with reverence. And see, that's the very tragedy today about contemporary worship. What are people doing with contemporary worship? What do you want? And they end up taking away from the word. They take away from the concepts of reverence and discipline. And they want to kind of have a happy time, you know. And we end up looking more toward man than toward God. And you see that. And it's becoming very distinctive in the approaches that local churches take to the kind of preaching they have, to the kind of Bible classes they have, to the very approach in worship. And people kind of sneer, oh, here's these traditionalists here. Let me tell you, there's a reason why we're doing what we're doing. We're trying to put before everybody in the assembly the true picture of God. It comes by teaching, 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 teaching. And we can start holding hands and we can start playing music and we can talk about emotional stories and get people's emotions stirred. But worship is not going to profit us until we have the true message of the living God put before us. You water down worship, guess what else you're watering down? You're watering down courage and faith. Will a courageous man listen and be teachable? Why? Beautiful. Well stated. I wished everybody could hear that. I don't know if the upstairs people are able to hear it. But you see, the idea is we trust God. And if God has something that we need to know it. And we're not afraid to learn that. And it's not about us. Remember we talked about last week the difference between brashness and courage? There's some people that are very bold and they can seem to be very decisive people and strong-willed people. And let me tell you something. If they're not teachable, they're not serving God. We constantly must be able to learn and to change and do what is right. Without that, God is separated from us, and that's not really courage. Yes. Yes, he admitted David could admit when he was wrong. And I'll admit to you now, it's time to end the class. Thank you for being part of the study.